Two sweethearts courted happily for quite a while, the simple life of country folk. The laddie told the girlie he must go away, on her little heart the grief most broke. Well, she said, you know I love you, honey, I love you, honey, best of all. So, baby, don't go away. Just as he went to go, it grieved the girlie so. These were a hard, hard thing.
Welcome to another edition of Critical Thinking. I'm your host and producer for this series, Andrew Patner. We have a special program for you today. As you can well imagine, we are on the eve of the 60th anniversary of WFMT. Since it's the eve, the erev of this very special Diamond Jubilee Day, we are going to have a special program for you of some memories, reflections, and music both heard on WFMT and inspired by music heard on WFMT. A lot of our, quote, greatest hits are getting plenty of airplay, and they never wear out, at least not for me, and I don't think for most of you, judging from our requests on the Midnight Special, our call-ins during our now only twice a year fund drives, and the general correspondence we receive. But artists that I first heard on WFMT or recordings inspired by connections, etc. The opener we just brought you actually takes on additional resonance because not only was that Sophie Tucker, the last of the Red Hot Mamas, singing one of her signature tunes, Some of These Days, but on the radio station of Don Tate and the late Andy Karsis, we brought you a recording that Matt DeStefano and I just realized is over 100 years old. Take that, Enrico Caruso. That recording of Some of These Days, the Shelton Brooks number, was recorded by Miss Tucker in July of 1911. It is one of the first recordings of American popular music, American vocal jazz ever made, and we brought it to you here. We will now let the rest of the proceedings proceed. For the first 35 or so years of WFMT, the radio station had a print component, a publishing arm, you might say, if it had been an industry rather than in the early days, one or two very talented ladies. There was Perspectives on the Arts, created and produced by Vi Fogel, Vi Fogel Uritz. That morphed into the WFMT Guide, with Jamie Gilson also being involved, and I believe Franny Ness. Franny and Jamie are both still around and doing very well, and we hope to have them as guests over this next year because we're going to be doing oral history programs as a part of Critical Thinking, I hope once a month over the next year for WFMT's 61st year. WFMT Guide became Chicago Guide, which became a full-size magazine, Chicago Guide, which became Chicago Magazine, and had a great run in the 70s and 80s until the then management of WTTW shook things up here at WFMT, not for the better. And we don't need to go through all that, the recorded ads, the lawsuits, the sale of the magazine, behind us now. 10-12 years ago, there was a briefer run of another publication shared with WTTW called City Talk. And 10 years ago, for the 50th anniversary of WFMT, City Talk put together a number of articles about the history of the station, and they asked me to reflect as critic at large on WFMT from a lifelong listener's perspective. So here is the essay that Tom Vallejo, I imagine, titled Frequency of Inspiration from Childhood, WFMT Shaped a Critic's Career. For a long time, to paraphrase Proust in reverse, I used to go to bed late, very late, as a matter of fact. In my parents' house in Hyde Park, we were allowed to stay up as late as we wanted, even on school nights, if we were either reading or listening to WFMT. I used to do both. I made my way through shelves of books as a boy and a teenager, listening all the while to Don Tate, Jim Unrath, and other hosts of the old live Tallman through the night, gaining a musical education in the process. I was born in Chicago the day after the Second City, and 8 years and 4 days after Bernie and Rita Jacobs's WFMT first went on the air. Where other kids might have had television and the lowest common denominator as a touchstone, I had these two mind-stretching institutions as a yardstick, by which to measure my own intellectual and artistic development. Of course, WFMT's presence on Kenwood Avenue was not limited to the late night hours. We woke up to the morning program, then hosted by a full rotation of all of the station's program hosts. We were addicted to Studs Terkel's program in its longtime 10 a.m. time slot, to the point where my younger brothers and I can recite by heart whole patches of some of Studs' great documentaries and interviews, such as This Train and his later New Year's interview with Racehorse Sample. I surely became one of the youngest fans of Bruckner and Mahler, listening to the expansive symphonies that Norm Pellegrini would program on weekday afternoons. And the Thursday afternoon broadcasts of the Boston Pops with Arthur Fiedler gave at least one fifth grader the chance to play orchestra conductor atop a kitchen chair with a cereal spoon used as a baton. As I got older, my parents had little to worry about in wondering where I would be on a Saturday night, as it was hard to imagine that any of us would not be glued to the Midnight Special, as hosted in rotation by Norm Pellegrini and Ray Nordstrand. The songs of Jacques Brel and Judy Collins, Burl Ives and the Weavers, Lead Belly and Pete Seeger were ingeniously interwoven with comedy sketches from Wally Cox and The Second City, Gene Shepard and Yuri Rosofsky, Nichols and May and Bill Cosby, and, of course, numbers from musical theater that whetted my appetite to see, hear, or perform in The Fantastics, Fiorello, Fiddler on the Roof, Oliver, and The Pajama Game. There were other WFMT institutions, too. My best friend, Kenny Blum, and I memorized large portions of Dylan Thomas's Under Milkwood, as performed by Richard Burton and an all-star cast, and, better yet, A Child's Christmas in Wales, as declaimed by the Welsh poet himself. As the winter holiday season came around, my cousins, the Zucker Boys, and my brothers and I would see who could pull off the best imitation of Truman Capote narrating his Christmas memory, or of John Henry Falk telling his own Texas Christmas story. I'll admit that my devotion to this singular radio station bordered on fanaticism. At a time when program hosts took varied shifts, worked hard to adopt such Pellegriniisms as the pronunciation hundred for hundred, and often did not introduce themselves by name, I prided myself on following each of their individual tastes and inflections. Years later, when I was interviewing for an internship with Chicago Magazine, then a part of the old WFMT, Inc., I think that I clinched the job when I showed Ray Nordstrand that I could identify each of the announcers by voice alone. I read all of the listings in the old WFMT and Chicago guides down to the fine print about album credits and newscast policies. WFMT newscasts were legendary then. There was no national public radio, and certainly little opportunity other than on WFMT to hear the BBC or gain access to other serious news sources. Especially in the hands of Mel Zellman, a WFMT newscast was a work of art. In those days, the station subscribed to newswire printing services from the Associated Press, UPI, Reuters, and the City News Bureau. Announcers would read these and the daily papers to find, edit, shape, and write a newscast that was as brief or complete as the news of the day or evening required. That the exercise of good taste and intelligence was the driving force here hardly needs to be mentioned. WFMT's selectivity was its essence. At that time, there were several full-time classical music stations in Chicago and others that played classical music as part of their program schedules. One of the many things that Norm Pellegrini brought to his listeners during his decades as WFMT's program director was an unfailing ear. Each listener might have had a favorite composer or a period that he or she preferred to others, but you simply could not hear a bad recording or even a mediocre one on WFMT. This same level of taste was shared by the rotating morning program hosts and taken to the nth degree by those two hosts of specialty programs, Don Tate's Collector's Item, with its survey of historic orchestral and instrumental recordings, and Andy Karsis's From the Recording Horn, with its early vocal gems, were late evening programs when I was growing up, and I tried never to miss either. Perhaps it was the sheer quality of music that I heard some 24 hours a day on WFMT that spoiled me for accepting the second rate in live performance. But surely it was the Sunday lineup of half-hour Critics' Choice programs produced by Lois Baum that opened up for me the possibility of my future career. Beginning with Claudia Cassidy's noontime survey of music, dance, and theater, leading in to the Delta Sunday Opera, the station offered three of our finest analysts of the arts each week. At 3 p.m., Herman Kogan would come on with his meticulously crafted essays on books, and then, in the evening, the one and only Harry Boris would offer his free associative meditations on the visual arts that would somehow, unscripted and seemingly unplanned, wind up closing with the perfect summary observation exactly 29 minutes after he had started. Since my father's unexpected death almost a year ago, this written in 2001, I've been staying with my mother in Hyde Park in the house where I grew up. The other night, I actually did go to bed very early and woke up very early as well, before 4 in the morning, to hear Peter Van de Graaff on what is now, what was then, LaSalle by Night, playing a lovely recording by baritone Kevin MacMillan from Schubert's Die Schöne Millerin, accompanied by Warren Jones. I'm sure Peter would not mind my saying that, as I lay in bed in the room in which I had spent my teenage years, on the third floor of the house on Kenwood Avenue, staring up through the attic skylight, I imagined that I was once again a boy, listening to Jim Unrath, live, playing not an excerpt, but the whole song cycle. The radio would have been an old Zenith held together by a rubber band. The singer, of course, Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau. The pianist, Gerald Moore. Eventually, I fell back to sleep, caught somewhere between my past and my present, with WFMT as the constant it has been in my life since, quite literally, the day I was born.
Love, oh, love, oh, care.
Bessie Smith in W.C. Handy's Careless Love. An interesting comment from an annotator here. It's one of those obvious statements when you think about it, but it also makes you think about it because you might not have realized it even in its obviousness. No matter who accompanied her, and often they were superb musicians, models of their kind. In fact, on this recording of Careless Love from May of 1925, none other than Louis Armstrong was on cornet, Charlie Green on trombone, and Fred Longshaw on piano. No matter who accompanied her, and often they were superb musicians, models of their kind, it was her particular treatment of the lyrics that gave all the dramatic quality to her performance, and her superlative expression of lament or humor. Her big, strong voice dominated the stage in the honky-tonks. Remember, of course, there were no microphones in those days, only a microphone in a recording studio. Well, big, strong voices have always been a big part of WFMT. And here are two of the biggest and the strongest and also the most beautiful. I think of this as a kind of what if. We all know the Pearl Fishers duet, and many of us, that may be all we know of the Pearl Fishers of Georges Bizet, though in more recent years the operas had some revivals. But we certainly know the duet, and we know it from the great recordings, usually from the 1950s. What if this vocal excerpt recorded from Don Carlo in the 1950s, Verdi, what if it had been available readily earlier on? Don't you think this would have become one of the WFMT top 20 or so? Jussi Björling, Robert Merrill.
Suprema, un altro ed è mio padre, un altro e questo il re, lei che adoro m'ha rapita, la sposa m'è promessa. Ah, quanto puro e bello quel dì, il dì senza di mani in cui ebri di speme c'era dato vagar nell'ombra soli insieme nel dolce suol di Francia nella foresta di Fontainebleau
Il voglio della terra. per l'imperator, che l'an inserto assonne e l'anno ricador. E voce che nel chiostro appai ancor.
Vorre la guerra in ciel si calmerà.
Lui desso l'infante,
o mio Rodrigo,
altezza,
sei tu che stringo al seno,
o mio Blanche, signor,
il cielo che avete mio nel mio lontano,
ma domani al mazzarlo, l'ora suona,
che chiama il popolo fiammingo, soccorrer tu lo dei, ti fa sua salvator.
Ma che vidio, quale palopo pena, un lampo di dolor su ciglio tuo ballena. Muto sei tu, sospiri, hai tristo il cor.
Carlo mio, con me dividi il tuo pianto e il tuo dolor.
Mio salvator, mio fratello, lascia ch'io pianga in seno a te.
Versami in cuore il tuo strozio crudele, l'anima tua non sia chiusa per me.
Parla, lo vuoi tu, la mia sventura prendi, e quall'orrendo strali il mio cor trapassò. Amo, un colpevole amor, Elisabetta
umor.
Giusto ciel, qual pallor lo sguardo chino al suol, tristo me, tu stesso, il mio Rodrigo ta lontanina me.
Non è di confortavo,
io te posso giurar. Tu soffri, già per me l'universo dispera,
mi arradrincia.
Quest'arcano dal re non fu sopreso ancora, ottien dunque da lui di partir per la Fiandra. Faccia tuo cor degno di te, opra farai, apprendi o mai in mezzo a gente appressa di venir. Mi seguirò, fratello.
Ascolta, le porte dell'asil s'aprono già, vivranno Filippo e la regina.
Elisabetta!
Rinfranca canto a me lo spirito che vacilla, serena ancora la stella tua nei cieli brilla. Comanda il ciel dei forti la virtù.
Vengo già,
Io l'ho perdute, Don Carlo, Verdi, the RCA Victor Orchestra, Renato Cellini, in the studio in Manhattan, November 30th, 1950. So 61 years ago, Buehrling and Merrill. And just to be clear, and I always appreciate my clarifiers, as I call them, the folks who write in to point out slips of the tongue, errors, or amplifications on Critical Thinking or Critic's Choice or anything else here at WFMT. And we should say you can do that right online with the Chime In feature at WFMT.com. Or, of course, you can write directly to us at Rentap. It's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P, at AOL.com. I should say that, of course, that recording was available first on a 45, I believe, and in all types of forms. My point was that in our CD age, and remember, this is the radio station that was the first ever anywhere to play a CD on the air in the early 80s, 30 years ago. My point only was that in the CD age, it is sure nice to have this Nimbus release of arias and duets, Buehrling and Merrill, and to just be able to pop it in. That's really what I was getting at. Another big, strong, beautiful voice, in this case, though, also attached to a great actor, a great performer, a Renaissance man, an intellect, an intellectual, and one of the great figures and one of the great tragic figures of 20th century American history, somebody whom WFMT stuck by through many difficult years up to and past his death. I speak, of course, of Paul Robeson.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. A long ways from home. Believer, a sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. A long ways from home, a long ways from home. True believer, a long ways from home.
That cutoff ending is the recording. It is not Matt DeStefano or Andrew Patner or Critical Thinking. 98.7 WFMT Chicago and WFMT.com. Paul Robeson, of course, Lawrence Brown, his very longtime accompanist who stuck with him through the blacklist, the persecution on both sides of the Atlantic. And if you want to read a truly scary, sad, but very informative book, see Martin Duberman's biography from several years ago of Paul Robeson, the way he was handled, treated in the Soviet Union and in the former East Germany, as well as by those who opposed him here in the United States. Notice that that's a recording you've probably never heard before. That's a recording long before all of the politics and all of the movies and so on. That's from January 7, 1926. And hear that youthful voice and imagine the full career that Robeson might have had on the musical stage, the opera stage, as well as the career he had in theater and recital. Well, another voice that you're going to know with an interesting recording history comes to us now. In fact, we'll just play it, and then after it, we're just going to hear another song that you never get to hear from the same 1935 recording session, because we always play the first one. Let the midnight special shine a light on me.
special, shall the heaven live a light on thee.
Careful listener will detect that I got ahead of myself a bit there. That is, of course, Lead Belly, Hughie Ledbetter, and we first heard the Midnight Special, but not from that Lomax recording where he introduced, oh yeah, that's the Midnight Special, that's the Midnight Special. This from a 1935 recording session, and I got ahead of myself because I was really pretty excited again with one of these what-ifs. And that is the chance to share with you that remarkable C.C. Rider. You know, Lead Belly, like John Jacob Niles, in many ways, one of these people who wrote songs that everyone assumed and that they sometimes even said were standards. And then they sang standards as if they wrote them. Well, Lead Belly wrote Midnight Special, and he wrote C.C. Rider. And those songs, though, then got picked up by all types of other people, and he's playing the mandolin on C.C. Rider, and he's picking it, both from 1935, and what if we had played both of those songs over these 60 years? It would have expanded a bit, the hearing of Lead Belly, but that's the great thing about great music, great poetry, great experiences culturally of any kind. They should lead you to wanting more. We're going to give you more in the sense of early recordings of people you know well from WFMT. Here's one of the first recordings of a great woman, a great voice, a great artist, a great character, and it's from before she met a certain Mr. Stud Terkel.
¶¶ and power. Keep my hand, keep my heart, keep my soul, I
That's, of course, Mahalia Jackson, Keep Me Every Day, Estelle Allen on organ. Mahalia's 25 when that recording was made, 25, 26 years old, back in May of 1937, before the big commercial career takes off, working with the music of Thomas A. Dorsey, the meeting with Studs Terkel, etc., etc. What a part of our history in Chicago, in America, and on this station. Well, we wanted to share with you some favorites, not necessarily the favorites that you always hear on WFMT, but the ones inspired by it. We wanted to share with you our little essay from 10 years ago from the defunct City Talk publication of WTTW, WFMT Network Chicago. It was accompanied, I'm very happy to say, by a wonderful set of illustrations by Tom Bachtel, who happens to still be my other half and a great supporter of my work and my program, and allows me to do this, what I get to do with all of you every Monday evening. If you haven't seen it, too, look it up online. Mia Clark did a lovely tribute to 60 years of WFMT. She interviewed a number of people, and I just thought as we go out in a lighthearted way, I would share with you some comments from our general manager, Steve Robinson. He was asked if there were any secrets he could share about WFMT, and he said, well, we're a pretty transparent organization, a lean operation. Everybody knows everybody and everything that goes on here. But he had a few. He revealed that Carrie Frumpkin's vocal cords are covered in velvet, that many a night one might see Ray Nordstrand, Norm Pellegrini, Studs Terkel, and Andy Karsis wandering the halls of our offices and studios, and that Carl Grapentine is indeed a giant panda bear. Well, with that, we will say our thank yous and goodbyes. We're going to go out with Mr. 5x5, Little Jimmy Rushing, in a signature tune of his and Count Basie's. And you've got just all the all-stars of the Count Basie Orchestra of February 1939. That's a self-introducing song. I want to thank Maite Stefano for all of these years of working with me on all of these years here at WFMT. Want to thank our funders from the beginning, pretty much, Alphawood Foundation and Richard and Susan Kiphart, stalwarts for a number of years, as well as other friends of this program. We want to thank you, tune in anytime to the Critical Thinking podcast, wfmt.com/critical thinking, and drop us a line anytime. Rentap, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P at AOL.com. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.
You do things you ought.